Thanks for joining us. Very recently, we've heard some news about the French embassy being approached by some of the claimants of the Sultan Sulu representatives. And of course, in due course, the Wisma Putra has issued a statement saying that they were asked to assess the properties of the Malaysian embassy in France, and they were denied entry. However, it was captured differently by different parties as well. Now, on top of that, in February 2022, this last year, an arbitration award worth about 15 billion US was issued in favour of the heirs of the Sultan Sulu against the government of Malaysia. And this is one of those largest awards and judgments ever issued by a commercial arbitral tribunal. I'm going to be honest with all of you. I'm not too sure about the whole head of tails of this story. And that's why it's extremely important for us to get a person that is an authority on this matter, a good friend of the show, Datuk Nitin Nadkarni. He is the head of the International Arbitration at LHAG, or Lee Shamuddin Allen and Gledhill. Datuk Nitin, let's take it really like from the basics. Imagine somebody who doesn't know anything about this whole situation and have been reading bits and bobs of this in the press. How do we make sense of this whole story before we even start to talk about what's going to happen or what we can expect to happen following these developments?
Thank you so much for inviting me onto your show. Okay, where do we start? We could start with the 1494 Treaty of Tordesillas, where Spain and Portugal decided that they had the right to divide up the whole world between themselves, and Spain got the Philippines. Or you could go to 1515, when Pope Leo XIV said that the Lord Almighty himself sanctified this division of us natives amongst the Spanish and Portuguese.
Wait, this was Brazil correct. Went to Portugal and the rest of South America.
That's correct. And there's a reason why I bring this up, because it goes to the question of what on earth gave the Spanish court the belief that it had the right to appoint an arbitrator. But you just go back further. So in colonial times, of course, the Sultan of Sulu claimed North Borneo, which we call Sabah now, but North Borneo as part of his ancestral lands. In the 1870s, there was a deed of cession signed between a couple of British adventurers, the British North Borneo Company, I think it's called, and the Sultan of Sulu, under which the Sultan of Sulu ceded in perpetuity, this is the language, in perpetuity, North Borneo.
So the Sultan of Sulu ceded in perpetuity the North of Borneo to government of Malaysia?
No, to the North Borneo Company. There's a couple of British adventurers, really. So it ceded to the North Borneo Company in return for an annual payment of $5,300. That North Borneo Company then subsequently ceded. There was a lot of problems there, you know. There was a lot of claims and all. They then ceded it to the British. It became a British protectorate subsequently.
Okay.
The North Borneo Holdings became a British protectorate.
So the British got involved. This is the White Raja time for Sarawak.
This is, yeah, about the time the White Rajas for Sarawak, but this is the British British Crown. It became a British protectorate. Now, at that time, the colonial power in the Philippines, who had sovereignty, I guess, over the Sultan of Sulu, was Spain, because of the Pope's holy sanctification and their conquest and whatever. Subsequently, the Spanish and the British government entered into a treaty to recognize all of this, to recognize this. And then, of course, you have in 1898, the Spanish-American War, under which the Spaniards lost to the U.S., and they then surrendered all sovereignty to the U.S. Mm. In due course, in 1915, there was the Carpentier Agreement, in which the Sultan of Sulu surrendered all his sovereignty, any claims he had, also to the Philippines, over this claim. And then, of course, eventually the Philippines gained independence, became a sovereign nation, and all the sovereignty or claims of the U.S. then went to the Philippines. So you've got a history that whatever sovereignty claims the Sultan of Sulu had, then there was the colonial power, Spain, which then went to the U.S., which then went to the Philippines government. And in 1968, the Philippines government has actually, or 64, I think the Philippines government passed legislation saying that it has a claim over North Borneo or Sabah.
Okay.
All right, so this is important because it comes to why this dispute is so important. It's not just about money here. Now, meantime, every year...
It is always about the money,
no,
right?
You'll see that why it isn't just about money. Every year, Of course, even when Sabah became independent, North Borneo became independent, became Sabah on the 31st of August 1963, before it formed Malaysia with Malaya, before it formed, it became independent first. Then it formed Malaya. After the formation, because there were all these issues, Philippines still claiming, you know, the territory and all, for whatever reason, Malaysia continued to pay the 5,300 to the descendants of the Sultan of Sulu.
Why?
Because they were concerned. Otherwise, you know, you might get the Philippines government saying, oh, this is all term. I don't know why, but they did. It's lost in history why they did it.
Still the same amount, 5,300.
It's still the same amount. So they've been paying it to the heirs. There was actually a High Court judgment in the 1930s in the High Court of North Borneo at that time, where the Chief Justice issued a judgment because the heirs, there was a fight as to who was entitled. The original Sultan had passed without heirs, so there were various disputes as to who should get this money. And the Chief Justice then made a declaration, this group of claimants should get this money. So, one, these claimants agreed that the court to decide this was North Borneo. And two, in his judgment, he said there's a perpetual surrender of the lease. The only claim these people have left is to the money. Mm. Okay, so it was only about money. Mm. So the Malaysian government continued playing. Then in 2013, there was the Sulu incursion. Mm. For whatever reason, and again, I don't know.
This is the Lahad Datu
incursion. Mm. The government of Malaysia decided that they were no longer going to pay this 5,300.
From the 2013
From the 2013 onwards. Incident. As a result, people claiming to be the heirs and to be entitled to this said, okay, if you don't pay, we terminate the lease. We want to take this to arbitration. Now, the original deed under which this had been ceded said that if there is a dispute, it will be referred to Her Britannic Majesty's Consul General for North Borneo to decide.
What is that, a court?
Sorry, no, it's a diplomatic officer.
Okay.
You know, because it was at that time, it was a British protectorate, or okay. It was a, you know, British sphere of influence. So both parties agreed they would refer it to a diplomatic officer
okay.
to decide. And that's also important. Not an arbitrator, a diplomatic officer, an administrative officer to decide. Mm.
Like a JPA or a...
No, I mean, it's a diplomat. It was the person who had responsibility for protecting, looking after British interests there.
Okay.
So, you know, just like we had the British residents in which we were more familiar with here, they had the consul general over there.
Got it.
So they said, we'll refer it to him to decide. So when this whole dispute arose, the Sulu descendants then wrote to the British government and said, okay, can you decide this because this is the diplomatic officer? And the British government said, get lost. This is nothing to do with us. Go away, you know. We're not going to get involved in this. Mm. And you would think the matter ended there.
Sorry, this is around 20...
This is 2017.
2017, okay.
Yes, because the payment stopped in 2013. 2017, they wrote and said, we want this decided. And the British government refused to get involved. Mm. Now, remember, the Sulu descendants are citizens of Philippines. This land is situated in Malaysia, and it is a dispute with the government of Malaysia. The Philippines government says this land, Sabah, belongs to them. They have a statute that says it belongs to them, or they have a claim over it. The Sulu claimants then went to the court in Madrid, the colonial power in 1880, who had ceded all sovereignty interests to the Americans, as I said, in 1898, who then in turn had passed it to the Philippines government. They went to the court in Madrid and asked the Madrid court to appoint an arbitrator to decide their claim for all the natural resources of Sabah. I don't know what the thinking was then. This was in February 2018, before GE14. They went to the Madrid High Court. It appears that the Malaysian government didn't enter and say, look, you Philippines court, you've got no business getting involved in this. How dare you claim to have jurisdiction over a part of Malaysia, a sovereign nation, where the any claims, if at all, should be by the Philippines government, and we will discuss that with the Philippine government. You butt out of this. You have no interest in this. You're not even mentioned in this agreement. If at all, it should be a British court. But we didn't participate, and the Philippines court then decided, I think in default, that it had jurisdiction to appoint an arbitrator. And that decision was made on the 8th of May, 2018, still before GE14. Then, after that, of course, we had the change in administration. They then proceeded, the court then, for the next year, ding dong, finally appointed an arbitrator. Again, the Malaysian government didn't seem to have participated in the proceedings there to object to this. The arbitrator was then appointed. He then invited the Malaysian government to defend. To first of all, he said, I have to first decide, do I even have jurisdiction to decide this claim? You know, because there are all sorts of issues involved. Again, the Malaysian government, this is the new government, didn't participate, didn't say, no, we are, you have no jurisdiction. I don't know the thinking, but they didn't participate. And he ruled, I will come to the thinking in a moment, he ruled, I have jurisdiction. And he made that decision. He heard submissions in January.
He means the Madrid...
Madrid arbitrator.
Arbitrator
decided...
One
person, Mr. Stampa, appointed by the court. He invited parties to submit on whether or not he had jurisdiction. The Malaysian court challenged his jurisdiction in the Spanish court. Malaysian government challenged in the Spanish court. Malaysian government also got a declaration from the Sabah High Court that there was no arbitration agreement. They went to the Spanish court to also challenge this chap's appointment. They didn't participate in the arbitration. They said, we don't recognize your authority. We'll come to whether that was right or wrong, but I'm just giving you the sequence of events. And then, so in January 2020, he heard submissions only from the claimants. The Malaysian government, he heard nothing from the Malaysian government. Then, in May 2020, so this is after the Sheraton move. In May 2020, he decided that he did have jurisdiction. He then again invited the Malaysian government to participate in the arbitration and to address the questions of whether Malaysia had sovereign immunity and whether or not the claim had any merits.
Okay.
The Malaysian government did not participate because they said, we're going to challenge this through the court system. We don't recognize your authority as arbitrator. You have no business. But they didn't participate before him. So eventually, in 2022, with no participation from the Malaysian government, he ruled that there was no sovereign immunity, and he ruled that there was, and then he awarded, this is in February 2022, he awarded almost $15 billion, that is three times the 1 MDB sum, plus interest at 10% per annum. And he basically said all the resources in Sabah belong to the heirs of the Sultan of Sulu. And then he assessed the value of those resources. He said, but I can't force the government to hand over Sabah. So I'm assessing damages, applying unidroit principles, which is not actually, which is some international principles we don't need to get into, and ordered that this money be paid to the heirs, to the Sultan of Sulu. So that's, in a nutshell, what has happened. And the Malaysian government is challenging it. Somewhere in between, because the Malaysian government had challenged it in Spanish courts, his appointment, he moved his arbitration to Paris. And that's it. So you see, the Spanish courts appointed him as an arbitrator and said the seat or the place of the, you know, the country, the jurisdiction should be Spain. Because the Malaysian government got various orders from the Spanish courts asking him to stop the arbitration, he then said, he then, on an application of the claimants, again, the Malaysian government didn't participate, moved his arbitration to France. He said because he didn't want interference from the Spanish courts, he moved it to France. And that's why now we have this issue. The Malaysian government is having to challenge it in two countries, Spain and France.
Theoretically, he can just move the arbitration to a number of other countries, am I right?
No, now he's already, he's functus officio. He's delivered his award, his job is done. He no longer has any role in this arbitration.
Okay, so don't be outraged when I ask you this question, yeah? Just, bear with me. Is this, is Malaysia bound by this award? Is this award valid? Is this award enforceable against Malaysia? And of course, what would be the subjects or assets that the Sulu Sultanate can enforce and execute against Malaysia?
Okay. Is this award valid? I mean, to me, it's a nonsense award. It really is a nonsense award. How can a commercial arbitrator decide on matters of public international law where there are disputing claims, where, you know, there's a whole load of problems with the award, but I don't want to get very technical. Having said that, these are arguments that could and should have been taken before the arbitrator. They weren't. And I'm not criticizing anybody because I don't know Spanish law well enough to know what advice was given to the Attorney General at that time, why he acted. There may be very good reasons. But if you ask me, the award is nonsense. Having said that, the award has been issued. Now, there is a treaty, the New York Convention from the 1950s, and 171 countries around the world have signed this treaty agreeing to recognize international commercial arbitration awards and enforce those awards in their own countries. We also are a signatory to that. Okay. Most countries are signatories to this.
Yeah.
So now that they have the award, they can take that award to 171 countries around the world. And you cannot do that with a court judgment from any court in the world. No court in the world can give you that power. They can take that arbitration award and go and register it in 171 countries around the world looking for assets of the Malaysian government to seize.
Okay, this is where the Malaysia Law Minister Azalina told the media that the government anticipates further execution actions against targeted assets of Malaysia Airlines, Bauxite Shipping Agencies and other GLCs, considering that the foreign legal proceedings commenced in Luxembourg and Netherlands, the Netherlands have seized some of Petronas's assets there. So this is going to be quite detrimental to the going concern situation of Malaysian GLCs abroad. Am I right?
Very much so. Very much so. It does form a problem. But you mean, let's get it clear what you mean by a GLC. For example, it's not everything. It is really only the government of Malaysia that is obliged. So if a company is listed, to give an example, and the Malaysian government has a golden share, maybe even has a majority of shares, but it is still not the Malaysian government. You cannot execute against that company. It is really the Malaysian government that is on the hook for these assets. So it must be GLCs which are not regarded as being separate from the Malaysian government. So it's assets of the Malaysian government abroad, and any GLC which is so intertwined with the Malaysian government that you cannot distinguish it from the Malaysian government, that is at risk. Mm. So that's really the situation. Now, how do you protect against it? Number one, obviously, when you take the award and you go and register it in any jurisdiction, Malaysia must challenge that registration. And I think they are doing that. Mm. Because it's only once it's registered that you can attach assets. They must challenge the registration, citing all the problems with the arbitration award. Mm. But a lot of that depends on what happens, because the Malaysian government is now seeking to set aside the award. They're doing two things. In Spain, they are challenging the appointment of the arbitrator in the first place, saying that Spanish court should never have appointed him and he never had jurisdiction, that in effect, he's nothing more than a cha kway teow seller who knows how to write 200 pages of a judgment. If they succeed in that, that kills it. The second is that in France, because as I said, he moved to France halfway through the arbitration, they have registered the award in his final award in France. They are challenging the award in France as well. If they succeed in these places, it makes their task much easier to resist enforcement anywhere else in the world.
Okay.
Sorry, this is all very technical.
No, it's not technical. I'm actually following each and every single statement that you're giving. But I just want to understand a little bit better in terms of the thinking behind the Malaysian government in not addressing these kind of claimants beforehand. Now it seems to me like now they're scrambling to stop this arbitration from being discussed even further. Is this too little too late in terms of trying to nip this in the bud?
Okay, as I say, I don't know what was the advice given by the lawyers in Spain and France at the material time. So I cannot talk because they are under civil law jurisdictions. They have different processes. In a common law jurisdiction, so anything that is descended from British, so Malaysia, Singapore, all of this, had the arbitration been held in these countries, you would participate in the arbitration under protest.
Yeah.
You would say, I don't recognize your jurisdiction.
Yeah.
But in any event, the claimants have no case because these are the wrong claimants.
Yeah.
Who are these people? Why do they claim to have the thing? We have sovereign immunity. They have no right. At most, they have a right to claim the 5,300. They have no right to claim anything else. And you have no right, and the damages you've awarded, you have no right to decide who owns this because it's a sovereign state. There's a number of things on the substantive issues. But I can only tell you from a common law perspective, it may be that in civil law jurisdictions, taking a step in the arbitration may have been seen as conceding. I don't have that advice. I would give the benefit of the doubt to the four attorney generals who've had oversight of this matter from 2013 till today.
Okay, final question. How do we make sense of this going forward? Does the Sultan of Sulu claimants get to get Sabah, basically?
They don't get Sabah because the arbitrator said, I can't give you the state of Sabah. But he gave them money. Far more dangerous. If he'd simply given an award saying, I award you the state of Sabah, we'd have been in a better position because we could have torn that up. You could have used that as, you know, it would have been a worthless award. Nobody would have recognized that award. Because he gave money, and they can go and enforce that award around the world.
So the payout is 15 billion US.
Plus 10% per annum.
Yeah, I would take the pain of going shopping at 171 jurisdictions.
That's exactly what they're doing. They are backed. You see, these are not these poor Sulu claimants. At the back of them is what is known as litigation funders. These huge funds which look for these kinds of big claims and pump huge sums of money. Because, you know, for them, you spend 5 million, 10 million pounds.
And the payout is...
But if you succeed, and 10 of these claims may fail, but you succeed in one claim...
There's
huge sums, huge payouts come in.
I didn't know there was a business model on this.
There's a huge business model on this. But as I was saying, the big problem that's come is, as a result of this award, in the Philippines, questions are being raised.
Okay.
Because they're looking at this and saying, hey, look, this arbitrator seems to have said that the Sulu claim, that the deed of surrender, you know, giving this land over to Malaysia, was terminated. So maybe he only gave money, but you know, we also have a claim over this. They're beginning to look at this.
Inspired, so to speak.
They are inspired. And you know, the problem with this is the second major case on sovereignty, affecting the sovereignty of the country, that we have lost in the last few years.
Sorry.
The first being Pulau Batu Putih.
Oh.
This is the second major case on sovereignty that Malaysia has lost. And let's remember, we are a new nation. We are surrounded by countries that have historic claims on various parts of Malaysia. Look at your history. The unfederated Malay states until the 15th of September 1945 were part of which country?
Thailand.
What was Konfrontasi about? What was Sukarno saying when he was making the Konfrontasi? All these claims are quiescent because our diplomats, you know, have done a superb job. We maintain good neighborly relations. You know, Wisma Putra has done a fabulous job over these past few years, of managing these sorts of issues. But as a country, you can't appear weak. You can't appear to be that you are not focused on defending to the hilt every time there is a challenge on sovereignty issues.
No quarter must be given, no inch must be given.
No, it's the country. It's our country. This must be the first priority of everybody, that you protect the country's borders.
Do you feel that any administration from 2018 or 2013, for that matter, until today, has given this kind of seriousness to this matter?
I mean, they're certainly giving serious thought to it now. You know that the Dato Sri Azalina has set up a secretariat. She's pulled in some of the top lawyers in the country. You know, they're doing a lot right now to look into this matter. I leave you to think, what was the thinking behind the 2013 suddenly cessation of payments of a miserable 5,300 ringgit, whether that was properly looked into before that was stopped. The thinking that in 2018, before GE14, resulted in us not participating to object to the jurisdiction of the Spanish courts. The thinking that after GE14 resulted in us not going back to the Spanish courts at that time and challenging, because the Spanish courts were still considering and not participating in the arbitration to challenge the arbitrator's jurisdiction, if nothing else. And the thinking that after the Sheraton move resulted in us not again, not participating in the arbitration to challenge the substantive claim, you know, to raise issues of sovereignty and these sorts of things. I don't know what the thinking was. It's difficult for me to speculate, but all I can say is that we should do a better job protecting our sovereignty.
Would you classify these as material mistakes?
I don't know whether they're mistakes because I don't know the legal advice that the attorney generals and the cabinets at that time had. It's difficult for me to comment on that without that kind of information. But certainly, there is a sequence of events over four prime ministers and four attorney generals that have resulted in today's situation.
Okay, final word. This is like, I only put in like two questions or three questions because this is truly a... You're giving me heart palpitations.
I hope so. I want the country to take this seriously, whether it's for this or for the future. There must be a dedicated unit in this country, in the Attorney General's chambers, which always looks after sovereignty issues. The moment anybody raises any issue of sovereignty, that becomes the utmost priority. The first duty of the government is to protect the country's borders. If you fail in that, you failed in everything.
Fantastic. That was Datuk Nitin Nadkarni, the head of international arbitration at Lee Shamuddin Allen and Gledhill. This story will continue to be covered by various media organisations, including that of Astro Awani. However, as per the comments coming in from Nitin earlier, this is a long-standing issue and will continue to be a long-standing issue. So perhaps all of us must take that huge interest in trying to understand the situation even better. If it's not just about the Sulu claimants, it's also about all the other claimants as highlighted by Dr. Nitin. So do stay on Astro Awani to learn more about these kind of issues. My name is Ibrahim Sen. Catch you in the next one.